Chapter 5. Today we learned what God has asked his followers to do. We learned the truth of the righteous path. Will you follow it too, as your parents have done? Will you find love and eternal life? Or will you rot on the wall and in the fields with the rest of the sinners? Sister Mackenzie's Sunday School Lesson. Aaron offers to show me around the elk, and Nick gives a half-assed excuse for why he can't come along and disappears. Aaron offers, the scrunched expression under her floral mask telling me she's stepping carefully. He's got a lot on his plate right now. Stay here, okay? I'll get you some water and a change of clothes. She asks what underclothes I use, and I turn red as I ask for boxers and a sports bra. In exchange, I get a bucket of murky water, a rag, and an outfit a size too big. The water's safe, she assures me. Just used a little is all. By the time I'm done washing myself, the water is disgusting. I stare at it for too long, because now that all Dad's blood is gone, I'm realizing I no longer have anything to remember him by. Aaron gathers me when I'm done changing, noting my freshly washed hair and clean face with a soft tilt of her head. Looking better already. I'm glad I look better. I had to resist the urge to rinse my mouth with the blood water, as if that would get out the taste of the flood. Ready? Walking into the elk is like walking into a funeral home. The boy's death has gotten into the walls and under the floorboards of this place. He lurks behind faded pride flags and flyers advertising STD tests and water restriction protocols. He's even made his way between the wires of an ugly ham radio sitting in a back corner of the lobby. Teenagers and young adults of every shape and size have huddled together, refusing to look up. One mends cloth face masks in silence. Another slumps by a barred front door, resting their forehead against the wall. Most of us were here on that day, Aaron whispers, and I make note of the proper term to use. She shows me around the gaunt kitchen and food pantry. We had a great summer program for at-risk teens, so when everything happened, a lot of kids just didn't leave. She takes me to the chalkboard near the barred front door, where people volunteer for chores like cleaning, cooking, and guard duty. There are about 40 names. One section is separated. The watch. I recognize all the names written there. Nick, Aisha, Faith, Cormac, Salvador, and a fresh smudge. Cormac must be the sunburned redhead I remember cutting off ears. The smudge is the dead boy. I could have gone home, I guess, Aaron says, gesturing for me to follow. But I was too worried about everyone, so I stayed behind. You can see how well that went. At least it's easier to transition when the rest of the world is gone. Someone steps aside to let us down a narrow hall, eyes downcast. Aaron's voice is quiet with sadness. I mean, all the hormones are either expired or spoiled, but at least there are no transphobic relatives to worry about anymore. I don't want to think about hormones. Even if they weren't years too old or baked by the summer heat, I won't be in this body long enough for it to matter. How did you all survive? I ask instead. The angels made it as long as they have through sheer numbers, strict travel protocols, and culling people at the first sign of infection. The elk doesn't seem to have enough people or supplies to pull that off. Well, some of us didn't. But if I had to guess, it's some combination of, I don't know, timing, location. Sadaf's parents were doctors and Aisha's were doomsday preppers, so that helped. And luck, maybe? There's got to be some credit due for being scared kids who locked ourselves in and waited for adults to come save us, even if they never did. She shakes her head as we get to the storeroom. Whatever it was, things got easier when Nick picked up the slack. He can be rude in making sure people stay safe, but he's good at what he does. Anyway, here are the pads and tampons if you need them. Just try to be stingy, okay? My face flushes. I really don't want to think about being on my period and having to deal with Seraph at the same time. Shedding my insides out one orifice is more than enough. Okay. Our last stop is the gym, which has been rebuilt into dozens of one-room apartments the size of closets. Sheets stand in for doors. A few femmes linger in the narrow pathways, and they watch me the way deer pick up their heads when they think a wolf might be nearby. One apartment at the back of the gym is mine. It's much smaller than my dorm at New Nazareth, but it's perfect. Nick and I think it's best to let you get some rest before you make your final decision, Aaron says while I push aside the sheet. Even though I took Nick's knife, it's not a done deal. So take it easy, okay? Thank you, I say, even though it isn't nearly enough for what they've done. Really? Aaron pauses for a moment, then says, Trevor's funeral will be in a few days. I don't want to push, and you don't have to if you don't want, but I think it'd mean a lot to his partner if everyone came, just to show their support. Trevor, the boy's name. The boy with bones like monuments. I turn it over in my head. Such a normal name. Normal, like Stevens and everyone else's. I'll be there, I promise. If grief gets caught in my body like it's tangled up with burrs, the least I can do is support the people who can actually feel something. The least I can do is help the people who are helping me. That's what it means to be good. I don't mean to lose the rest of the day, but as soon as my body recognizes I'm safe, it shuts down on me. No guns, no graces, and my brain is out like a light. I barely have time to pull the curtain door of my apartment closed. If I was on the fence about trusting the ALK before, my body has made the call for me. And my body has also made the call to whisper as I press the heels of my hands into my eyes and topple onto the mattress. Thank you, God. Thank you. Before I know it, I'm waking up the next morning, disoriented and dry-mouthed. There is no cross on the wall watching me sleep, no Bible waiting for me to open my eyes. The strange pattern on my sheets is penguins and polar bears. I roll onto my back and stare at bare plywood. Penguins and polar bears. Have all the animals of Earth been doing better without us? 2 years isn't nearly enough for Earth to recover. Even late spring can be deadly hot, and I haven't seen snow since I was really little, even though Dad told me it used to snow in Pennsylvania every year. But the world must have gotten at least a bit better, right? What a terrible thing to wonder. That's Mom in my head, all the Sunday school lessons, all the preachers at the pulpit, finding reasons for why the slaughter of 9 billion people was God's righteous plan. I put on my shoes and push aside the curtain. Outside the apartment, early morning sun comes in through small windows at the gym ceiling. In the narrow path between rooms, I'm just someone else getting ready for the day. One of all the people stretching, leaning over the tops of their rooms to whisper to a friend, groggily wandering out to the lobby. More pride flags hang from the walls and drawings are tacked next to torn-out pages of books and other tokens, necklaces and charm bracelets, and all sorts of things held up to ward off evil. More than anything, the ALK is quiet. Good morning, and wake up, asshole, and go get the job before someone takes it, are all whispers, from raspy to gentle and everything in between, but never loud. As if angels are pressing their ears to the outside, waiting to strike if they hear the smallest sound. Following a voice's advice, I go out to the chalkboard. 40 names wait for the day's chores, with the watch in the corner. A boy picks up a piece of chalk from the bottom of the board and jots his name down for maintenance duty. Sarmat. He spells out and hands it to me. I need to do something. Make up for the ALK taking me in. Or give my hands something to do to keep them from shaking. Give my head something to focus on besides the rot trickling between my fingers. I scrape my name down under cleaning duty. Benji. It's the first time I've written it. That's me. That's me. I savor it until the person behind me clears their throat. I pass the chalk along. I skip breakfast. I'm not hungry, and I don't want to bother anyone by asking what the food protocols are here, and end up in the kitchen with a rag and a small bucket of soapy water. Gray water. No good for drinking. The kitchen is bright with glaring paint colors, trying and failing to liven up a Spartan room. A few people in the back huddle around plates of scavenged food. By the sink, Faith makes coffee on a battery-operated heating coil. My head spins at the scent. I haven't smelled coffee since Mom brought us to New Nazareth. It's so sweet and strong, I can almost taste it. I set my bucket down on the counter and lean against the sink. It's not a sink that works, since there's no running water, but still. Faith looks over with a start. "Scared me for a second there," she says, rubbing the bags under her eyes. Even though she has more muscle than most people and half a foot on me, she looks small. "You're so quiet. Benji, right?" "Yeah, I just wanted to..." How am I supposed to word this? "Thank you for what you guys did yesterday. I'm really sorry about your friend." "People die," Faith says roughly. He knew what he was getting into when he joined. Her throat tenses as she turns back to the coffee, watching it brew. "You want some? This is for Aisha, but I think I made too much. She'll be pissed if I waste it." "I'll try it." Faith raises an eyebrow. "You've never had coffee before?" "No. Should I have?" Maybe not. You're like, what, 14? 14 was probably just her being polite. I could be mistaken for 12 on a bad day. Dad used to say my baby face would serve me well when I grew up, so I consider it a waste. 16, actually. "I'm teasing," Faith says. "Give it a shot." When the coffee is done, she gives me a swallow's worth in a mug. It smells amazing, but it's so dark, it's almost black. I remember it being a nice, warm brown in movies. I carefully pull down my mask and bring it to my lips. "Oh, no." I cough and splutter. A few heads turn. "This tastes like dirt." For the first time, Faith manages a laugh and takes a handful of brightly colored sugar packets from the drawer beside me. There aren't many left. "Yeah, it's awful. That's why you don't drink it plain. You want sugar? I think we can spare some." "No, thank you. I think you've put me off it forever." "More for the rest of us. Actually, have you seen Aisha? I don't want this to get cold." Faith leans against the wall to wait, and I start scrubbing the counters. It's relaxing. Sweeping, cleaning up, doing things with my hands. In New Nazareth, it never mattered that I was the only child of Reverend Mother Woodside. I still had to do chores like everybody else. There's something about menial work that lets your brain go quiet. Something satisfying in the way your arms and feet ache afterward. Something to be proud of in looking across a clean room and knowing you've done your part. Even then, I'm watching Faith from the corner of my eye. The shaved stubble of her head and the scars above her low-cut tank top. That kind of outfit would get her torn to pieces in New Nazareth. There's so much freedom here. And so many different kinds of people, too. I swear I've seen more non-white faces than white. I've spent the past 5 years of my life looking at so many shades of white people that I've been doing double takes, then gluing my eyes to my shoes because that's rude. What gets me most of all, though, is that everybody here is a non-believer. All of them. Not a single one believes in the angelic movement. Not a single one has given themselves to God in the exact way the angels demand it. Every person is someone I've been taught to hate since I first stepped foot in New Nazareth. I checked Nick and Aaron for weapons and demanded they back away. I've held tension in my shoulder so hard for the past few hours that they hurt, and the Elk has done nothing but offer me coffee and a place to sleep. I'm an asshole. Thanks for the brain rot, Mom. Truth is, I'm the person they should be worried about, not the other way around. I can't let anyone but Nick and Aaron know what I used to be, because they'll want me dead, and I won't blame them. I have to figure out the rules for the Elk the way I figured out the rules for New Nazareth. Rule 1. Be careful with religion. Even if Faith is wearing cross earrings. Even if her name is Faith. I really want to ask about the earrings. They're the first crosses I've seen in days besides the ones carved into the dead. After a second of scrubbing a stain off the countertop, I decide my best course of action is not to ask at all, but to point it out. No judgment implied. I like your earrings, I say. Faith reaches up to touch them, eyes widening a bit in surprise. What, these? Her hand jerks away. They don't mean anything, she says defensively. I just thought they were pretty. Her tone takes me off guard. They are. They were my mom's. We stopped going to church when I was 10. Anyway, it doesn't mean anything, really. Her chest heaves. Her gaze won't meet mine. It's fine, I assure her. Do people give you trouble for it? For the earrings, for going to church? No, nobody does. Sorry, I'm overreacting. I put the rag back in the bucket. We're the only two on this side of the kitchen. For what it's worth, we might as well be alone. So I say, can I ask if you believe in God? Faith blinks at me. It's not a trap, I say. I swear. She immediately falls into a ramble, like she's just been waiting for someone to ask. I do, actually. And I'm still trying to figure out how I feel about that. Talking to friends, you know. Sadaf is Muslim, Salvador is Catholic, Carly is Jewish. To see if anything clicks. Or if I'm just gonna have to deal with believing in the same kind of God those motherfuckers do. Even though I flinch at the sudden swear, her cheeks push up into her eyes, the way it happens when someone is actually really smiling. You know, the first time I brought it up to Sadaf, she couldn't stop laughing. I felt like an asshole. I guess what I'm saying is, I believe in something, and I don't know what to do with it. And maybe I don't actually believe in anything at all, and I just want to because I hate the idea of Trevor being faced with nothing. A moment of silence. It's not awkward or anything, just a second of respect for the dead. I'm sorry, Faith says again. I don't mean to be so. No, I get it. I've been thinking a lot about it since he, you know. I know. Faith says, what about you? What's going on in your head? Before I can answer, Aisha wanders into the kitchen, rubbing sleep from her eyes. Faith mouths, sorry, and grabs a mug from the cabinet. I smell coffee, Aisha mumbles. That's because I made some. Faith pours a cup and sets it gently in Aisha's hands. Take it easy today. You don't have to. Please take the coffee. You can't act like nothing's wrong. Faith's smile wavers, the light dropping from her eyes for just a second. Please, let me have this. Aisha accepts the mug, bringing down her mask to take a slow, tentative sip, and her eyes close in exhaustion for just a moment, perfectly still, like if she moves, she'll shatter into a million pieces. Under her mask, she's put on a pretty red lipstick that stains the rim of the mug. Faith's question latches on with teeth. What's going on in my head? What do I believe? How much of it is me, and how much of it was put there? I don't know. Over the course of the day, a few other people introduce themselves. And I fumble through a parade of awkward conversations. One is with another trans guy, Calvin. When I turn down the offer of a chest binder, I've never really cared about flattening my chest, he scrunches up his nose like I smell bad and says he has something else to do. The only person I manage to hold a decent conversation with is Sadaf, a black hijabi girl with a medical textbook who asks me to visit her if I ever feel even slightly under the weather. Never hurts to be proactive, she says, smiling so wide her eyes close a little bit. What do you do if someone gets infected? I ask. She says, I tell Nick. He takes care of it. I do the math, trying to recall how long the other Seraph trials lasted, the time it took for the other martyrs to fall apart, for their skin to come off in their hands. Instead of the flood's usual days, hours, Seraph has given me a precious few weeks. I can hide the vomiting and the pain, but by the end of February, there will be no hiding anything. Nick said I would be okay. Aaron said I would be okay. They promised. I know that. Right?